Okay, today's daf is Kuf Mem Bet. We're going to start at the bottom of Kuf Mem Aleph. If you remember, we had yesterday, there were six attempts, right? We had this, let's just go back to Kuf Mem Aleph Amud Bet, sort of toward the top. We said there was a case where he says to his wife, Nechasai Lahai Dema Beret, right? My Nechasim will go to the one who is pregnant, you know, the one who you're pregnant with. Amarafuna habe mezaka l'ubra. Mezaka l'ubra lo kana. Right, the assumption here, by the way, I wanted to go back. Here the assumption is that he was on his deathbed. It was my confusion. The Mishnah, I said yesterday that it was all about Shechiv Merah. The Mishnah, I forgot to, there's a machloket in the Mishnah. The Rashbam says it's dafka even a bari, and the Rif and the Rambam say it's specifically a Shechiv Merah. So there's a machloket about whether our case in the Mishnah, which, when he says, if it's a zachar, if she gives birth to a nekeva, whether it's a...
My original question, what are we learning from it? It's just an arbitrary thing that a bari is saying, I'll give this amount of money for a girl that's born. And
so the question is, would there be a kinyan? The relevance is, can he change his mind? Right? In other words, if he then... It's always an issue, did he actually affect some sort of... By the way, if you say it's a shchiv merah, then if he just said it, it's enough. If you say it's not a shchiv merah and it's a bari, you'd have to say that he actually wrote a shtar to go along with it. Otherwise, for sure, it's irrelevant. But then the question is there validity to the shtar even? That's what I assume would be the question. Can he be chozer bo? Because what's a shtar if you're makneh to something that's lo ba'al olam at all? Again, the Mishnah wasn't really relating to Davar Shelo Ba'al Olam. It was clear to the Mishnah that it was okay to do this kind of thing. The question was just, what did he mean by his words? Did he mean, you know, especially when he said Zacharu Nekeva, did he mean twins? How much was he actually trying to give him? So there's all sorts of issues that come up, whether you say it's a Shechiv Merah or not, really. That shouldn't be the issue. So then we said that, according to this case, he says to his wife, Nechasai Lahai Dema Beret, the one you're pregnant with. So I'm Rav Huna, that's Mezaka L'Ubar, and a Mezaka L'Ubar Lokana. And then Rav Nachman says, what about our Mishnah? And Rav Huna puts aside our Mishnah and said, Eini Yodea Mishnah. So the Gemara doesn't like that he just pushes it aside and says, what do you mean? He had all sorts of possible things he could have said. So we saw seven possibilities. I'm going to go back to number six because we kind of rushed through at the end. I want to make sure it was clear. Three lines from the bottom. V'leimale bishe yalda. Why don't we say that he said it after she had already given birth, but he didn't know yet, right? That, in other words, he's, let's say, outside the delivery room, and he says, I want this money to go to, right, to L'Hai Dema Aberet, right, to the one that she was pregnant with. So maybe he says it, Bisha Yalda, after she had already given birth, and then there's no issue. Why don't, I'm sorry, not this case, the Mishnah, right? Why don't you say that the Mishnah was talking about where he said, I'm going to give it to this child when it is born, right? When, or, no. Wait, let me clarify.
That is born when I
no,
find
no, no.
out
he
is.
Says it after, he says, im zacharim nekeva, let's say, or if it's a zachar, if it's a nekeva, he's out, he's not with the, right, again, we said this yesterday, right? They weren't in the delivery room, clearly. He's somewhere else, but she's already given birth at that point. And that's why, in other words, you could say it's not even a Nubar he's talking about. It's just he doesn't know. Remember, there was also the Mivas Reini. Someone's telling him, right? There's obviously a time lag between the time that he says his statement and the time that, you know, let's say he finds out. But there, so it could be that he actually made his statement after she had given birth. Maybe that, right? Nobody said she was still pregnant with the case. So then they say, Ihachi de katane seifa, but then it doesn't match the seifa. Because the seifa says, V'imamar kol masha teleid ishti, right? One of the cases in the Mishnah is, it says very explicitly, whatever my wife gives birth to, meaning in the future, which means she hasn't yet given birth. So therefore, right, Hareze Yitol, so it shouldn't say kol she teleid according to this answer. It should say kol she yalda mibayle, anything, right, that she gave birth to, if he's really talking after she gave birth. So that answer can't hold. Last answer, v'leimale de'amar l'chishe teled. Why doesn't he say, if it's a zachar, right, when, at which time that you give birth, this will be kanoi to him. It's basically saying, right, that right now the baby's not born, but in the when it's born, this kinyan will take effect, and that should work. So again, they answer, no, don't assume that that will work, because Rav Huna, who's the one who we're asking this question about, again, this last one is rejected. Rav Huna l'ta'amei, da'amar Rav Huna, af l'cheshe teled lo kana. Even if you say the words, amakne, right? I want to give you a gift, right? At which point that you are born, which means he's not really giving it to the ubar, he's giving it to the ubar when it's born. But that also doesn't work according to Rav Huna. That's still too up in the air, right? It's still not davar shabal la'olam. So therefore, because right now, when he says it, the baby's not in existence. Even if he's saying, I want it to apply or to kick in when the baby's born, since right now, okay, I saw someone say there's a weakness in the maaseh hakna'ah, right? He's trying to give a gift to someone, and he's giving it at a future point. Now, I could say I'm makna something to you at a future point, but that's if you're in existence, right? According to Rav Huna, if you're not in existence right now, I can't be makna to you at some future point because there's a weakness in this maaseh kinyan right now. So therefore, even Rav Huna says, even l'cheshetelet lo kana. And therefore, okay, we'll stop mid-sentence right now, but therefore, we've rejected all seven possibilities of what Rav Huna could have answered, and we now understand why he was backed into a corner and had to say, I don't know who says the Mishnah. Okay, I don't know who the author of the Mishnah is, and therefore he kind of rejects it. Now we're going to see where Rav Huna says, af l'cheshetelet. And we're going to see there's a three-way machloket. Da'amar Rav Nachman, ha-mizakeh l'ubar lo kana. Someone's mizakeh and ubar, it doesn't work. But l'cheshetelet kana. But if he says the words, when the baby is born, right? Meaning, Rav Nachman says exactly what we said a minute ago, he says would work. If you say right now, I am going to give this ubar a gift, at which time that it's born, Rav Nachman says that actually works. Rav Huna amar, af l'cheshetelei lo kana. Right, Rav Huna says, and that's l'shitato, even if you say l'cheshetelei, it wouldn't work. V'Rav Sheshet amar, echad ze v'echad ze kana. Rav Sheshet says, both of these are effective. L'cheshetelei, right, and even being mizake to an ubar in a regular case, right, that... any kind of zikoy le'ubar would work according to Rav Sheshet, and we're going to see why in a minute. Before we get there, I want to point out something that in Bava Metzia, okay, according to this, what do we have? We see that when it's davar shelo ba'al olam, right? Here we have a davar shelo ba'al olam, which is the ubar, okay? We have this ubar, and what do we say? This is davar shelo ba'al olam, and according to this, Rav Huna says, right, he's more machmir. Right, because he says even l'cheshetele won't work, and Rav Nachman is more meikel. Again, he's not as meikel as Rav Sheshet to say it's totally fine. But he says it works if you make your kinyan now and say it will apply at which point that the baby is born. This is a little problematic if you look at a sugya in Bava Metzia Samach Vav Amud Bet. What does it say? Hamochir peirot dekel l'chaveiro, which is again davar shelo ba'al olam. Amar Rav Huna, an shelo ba'u le'olam, yachol lachzor bo. Okay? Until they actually come into existence, you can be chozer bo. But misha ba'u le'olam, but once those fruits are there, ein yachol lachzor bo. Why does he say that? Once they come into existence, right, means your kinyan was a good kinyan, which is basically l'cheshetelet, right? And Rav Huna says, it works. Right? Because if eino yachol lachzor bo, it means it was a good kinyan. Here, Rav Huna says it wasn't a good kinyan. And in that case, Rav Huna says it is a good kinyan. And Rav Nachman amar, af mi shabao la'olam yachol lachzor bo, even when they come into existence, you can be chozer bo. Even though you sold them, your sale was invalid because it's davar shelo ba'al olam, which is the exact reverse of what goes on here. So the Rush offers, there's some other answers given, but I'll give you the Rush. The Rush answers very interestingly. He distinguishes between something I said the other day, that they seem to equate these things, which are a little hard to equate, I thought, and it's interesting that he dafka separates between them. There's two different kinds of davar shelo ba'al olam here, right? There's being makne, the davar shelo ba'al olam. In the case of the fruits, they were being makne, the fruits, right? They were trying to give something that wasn't yet in existence to somebody else who was in existence. And in this case, they're trying to give to someone who's not in existence yet. An object that is in existence, right? The money's in existence, but they're giving it to someone who's not in existence. So what they say is, the Rush says, that Rav Nachman and Rav Huda view these as two totally different things, right? Until now, we were kind of saying, Devar Shelo Ba'al Olam seems to be this catch-all, which includes both the person you're makneh to and the object that you're being makneh. So the Rush says we distinguish, and that's what's going on here. That when it comes to the item in question, so Rav Huna says, oh, that's okay. You can be makneh the item as long as the person is in existence to receive the item. But when it comes to the ubar, Rav Huna views the ubar as if he's not yet in existence, and therefore you can't possibly be makneh to someone who's not even in existence. And Rav Nachman would dafka say the opposite. So I thought that was a good distinction. Okay. So now we're going to try to understand. Okay, we're getting a little sidetracked because we've been focusing very much on Rav Huna. Now we're going to see Rav Sheshet's opinion. Rav Sheshet said, even, right, Hamazake le'ubar is kone, whether you say l'cheshetelet or not, it works. So Rav Sheshet, right, he says, echad ze v'echad ze kan. So on Rav Sheshet, minamin ala, where do I derive this from? So he brings a braita where he proves his answer, his opinion. Ditanya, ger shemet. Remember what happens when a ger dies. A ger who has no yorshim, right, none of his own children after conversion. What happens? He dies. All of his property is hefker, because he doesn't have any relatives. So, bizbizu Yisrael nechasav. And then people came and basically took all of his stuff. But later, shamu sheyesh lo ben, it turns out he had a son. So they took the items, thinking they were their own. Turns out he had a son. Oh, shaita ishto meuberet, or his wife was pregnant at the time of his death. Which means what? Well, right? If it's an ubar, then, right, what would you say? If the ubar is not kone, then this is meaningless that she was pregnant, basically, because they acquired the hefker item. Once the baby's born, it's gone already. So, if ishto is meuberet, chayavin lahachzir. Okay? They would have to return the item to the child when the child's born. Now, hichziru hakol, okay, but this could work anyway. This actually isn't such an issue because this could work anyway because even if you say the ubar is not kone, it's his yerusha. In other words, a baby is yoresh in the womb already. So they, even though they took it, right, they'd have to return it. But hichziru hakol, so what happened in this case, okay? Then they return everything that they took because they heard that his wife was pregnant or there was a son. V'acharkach shamu shemeit bino ohi pila ishto. But then they hear that the child either died or the wife miscarried, which means that they can own the items again. So now what happens? There's two options. Either you say that whoever took it first gets to keep it because there was not really a kinyan anyway to the ubar. Right, and then therefore, when the it turns out the baby miscarried, so you know, or the woman miscarried, then you would say the original one was good. But here it says hechzik bashnia kana uvarishona lo kana. So only if you took it a second time, right? Remember, there's a time thing. The first moment they take it, they think there's no children. Then they find out there's children, so they give it back. Then they find out that the child is dead or the mother miscarried, so they take it again. So whoever took it the second time gets to acquire it. But from the first kinyan, you didn't acquire it. So what's the relevance? The isal kadatach, ubar lo kane, if you're going to say the ubar is not kone, then and the woman miscarries, so lama lehu achzuke b'shnia, ha ichzuku lehu chada zimna. Right, according to Rav Sheshet, what does he say? If the ubar is not kone, then there should be absolutely no reason to do a second, right? That the second people should be kone, it should be from the first. Because the ubar was never kone, and therefore the items were actually hefker. Okay? So now Abai and Rav are going to give two different reasons as to why you can't learn from here to our case.
Is this assuming that the woman has not converted?
She's Jewish.
Nothing goes to his wife.
No, his property doesn't go to his wife in any case. Okay. Remember, the Yerusha always goes to the son, right? Only the wife's property goes to the husband. Okay. Husband's property doesn't go to the wife. So now, what's the case? So they say, you follow that here, the point is that the Ubar must have been Kona, otherwise there'd be no point for an extra Kenyan. That's what Rav Sheshet said. Otherwise, the first Kenyan should be relevant in the case of Yipila Ishto, because the child never actually had a Kenyan on it. So Abaye says very simply, no, you're comparing two different things. Amar Abaye, Yerusha haba me'eleha shane. This is a case of Yerusha. The Ubar was supposed to be Yoresh. Now for that, you don't need a Kenyan to get Yerusha. The Yerusha goes automatically. So there's no need for a Kenyan. So that's not the same as if I go to some random woman who's pregnant and I say, I want to give a gift to your, to whatever is going to be born, you know, from your baby. That is where they had a machloket, Ubar Kano, Lo Kano. That is a separate thing. But this is a Yerusha, which was coming to him anyway. And that's why it's stronger, so strong that the first Kenyan of the people, whoever took the property, doesn't work. Because in fact, his existence and the fact that he was going to be a Yoresh was enough to basically say that Kenyan is invalid. Rav has a different answer. Rav Amar, Shane Hatam, Jirafuya Mirafyam Biadaihu Me'ikar. He says there's a weakness not in, the issue is not that the Yerusha is Ba'me'eleha. He views it from a different perspective. Not in terms of the Kenyan that went to the Ubar, he views it in terms of the Kenyan that the people had on the property. When the Ger died, these people actually had no clue if he had a son or not. Okay? You wonder a little bit, maybe this Ger was living a little bit, you can imagine, right? The people didn't exactly include him so much. Here their neighbor dies, they have no idea whether he has children or not, okay? But you can imagine such a scenario, unfortunately. So here, what happens? They see he died. They say, let's go take his property. But they really don't know whether he has children or not. So when they took the property in the first case, there was a bit of a weakness in that Kenyan. It was a rafe, it was rafoy, it was weak. It was a weak type of Kenyan in the first place.
Do you have an obligation to ask?
Do you have an obligation to ask? That's a good question.
It seems so ruthless.
Like the assumption that it's healthcare without...
Right. It does seem quite strange. That's why I think it's odd that they had no clue that... Also, in other words, if you read Abaye, it sounds just, you know, it's not if you read Abaye. If you don't read Rava, you just assume, like we've seen in many cases, that, you know, with the father saying, oh, that's my Bnei Bechor, that people just had no idea. In other words, maybe the son was living, maybe he was married at some point, his wife went away, and they really don't know. Like, they just never saw a son, so they assumed there was no son. According to Rava, it's much more disturbing because it seems that when they first took it, they really had no idea whether he had a son or not. Or if you want to read it a little to be melamed zchut on people, they assumed he had no children, but they didn't know for sure. And that raises your question, which is, well, if they didn't know for sure, they really shouldn't have come and taken it. Okay? But what's the issue? You know, when things are hefker, right? Imagine, I know there's these websites, right? People post, I'm giving away a table. You know, whoever comes first will get it. People jump on it because they know if they don't go right away, it's going to be gone. So you can imagine, a ger dies, it's a free-for-all. So they don't want to wait to find out because they know someone else will take it in their stead. So they take it right away. Worst case, someone will come and claim it and they'll give it up. Right? That's the way I think it's sort of viewed, certainly in Rava's mind. So when they took it in the first place, they knew that there's a good chance they might have to return it, but they took it hoping that there really aren't any children and it'll be mine rather than going to my neighbor who's going to get it instead of me. So, but they knew it was a weak, they knew it wasn't really that they were kone the item. And this is what we call gemirut dat, right? Did you really have intent? We've seen this before. Did you really have intent to sell it to the person? Did you really have intent to, right? We saw it most recently with Toch Kedei Dibor. Right, that even though you're selling something to someone, the rabbis gave you a little leeway because we know you're not so serious until, you know, we give you a few seconds just to maybe change your mind because we know you haven't yet had Mirudah, right? We said the exceptions were Avodah Zarah and Kedushin because there, for sure, you're going to have Mirudah. You're not going to do that kind of a thing without actually giving a lot of thought to it. So because the first Kenyan, he wasn't really sure about, it's not that the Ubar was Kona in the interim. It's just that the first kenyan was a weak one because he didn't really know. When he finds out that the wife is in fact pregnant, he realizes, oh, forget it. It's obviously not mine. He gives it back. So that kenyan was totally erased because even though in the end nobody was koneh in the interim, he just was really never intending 100% to be koneh for himself. So therefore, when the child turned out to be not alive anymore, it doesn't revert back to him because he kind of undid whatever weak kenyan he started with. And therefore, it's only the second kenyan that works. Now, so according to this, they basically say, Rav Sheshet, this braita can't prove your point because these are different case. You know, this is a different issue. My benayu, what's the difference whether you say Abaya or Rava? Ika benayu sheshamubo shemet velo met, v'acharkach met. What if before they took the item, okay, this will make Tzivia happy, before they took the item, they heard that he died. So they knew he had a son, but they heard he died. So they said, oh, great, we can go take the property. Then, so they had a full kenyan according to Rava. But then what happened, right, assuming this is the mother miscarried, they heard the mother miscarried, then what happened? Turns out it was false rumor. So then, according to Abaye, the Ubar was actually Kona, right? You would say, you know, the Yerusha Habame Leha went to the Ubar. It's irrelevant that they thought the baby was dead. According to Rava, it's very relevant they thought the baby was dead, because once they thought the baby was dead, right, they assumed I'm doing a full-fledged kenyan. So then, according to Rava, you'd be able to revert back when it turns out the kid actually did die afterwards, then you would say, ah. So then the goes back to the original kenyan, because really the Ubar was never koneh, because an Ubar can't, right? And then, according to him, the Ubar was never koneh, and therefore you would get it back to, from the original kinyan. Okay, now we're going to have a possible a source that's going to reject Rav Sheshet's opinion. Tashma. And again, we're going to say, oh, it doesn't reject, right? Here, Rav Sheshet brought a proof. We gave two rejections as to why that source can't provide us proof. Now we're going to try to bring a source to reject him, and then we're going to bring possible answers why it actually doesn't reject his answer. Tinok ben yom achad, Nochel umanchil. What does this mean? A tinok, if he lived for one day, that's enough for him to basically inherit in that one day, and enough so that he can pass it off to people who inherit from him. Okay, we're going to talk about what exactly this case is, but what's the assumption? It only works with a ben yom echad, but ben yom echad in Ubar lo, but right, in Ubar, it wouldn't work. So what does this show? Why wouldn't it work? Because in Ubar is lo koneh, okay? In Ubar can't be koneh, because only you have to be, according to this, right, it sounds like you have to have lived one day in order for it to work.
Except that baby is considered, isn't considered alive until it's 30 days old.
Yafeh. So this shows that even though a baby's not really considered a ben kayama, we call him a nefel, the first 30 days, for the halachas of nachala, we consider him born and he can be koneh. Okay? So that's, it's an exception to that.
After one day old, not after. Like he could be born alive and then...
Yeah, he's born alive and then he dies after a day.
But he has to be alive. A full day?
So, well, the assumption is, let's say we're talking about the father dies. So the father's alive when the baby's born, then the father dies, and then the baby dies. Okay, you would have to have this scenario where the baby would die within the first day, right? And within that time, the father died. So within that time, right, because otherwise the father had died, he was a Ubar. So the point is here, he's a kayama, right? He's alive, and then he lives for a day, so he can be nochel and manchil. Now, what would that mean? There's a bit of an issue here. It's a bit strange, because what does it mean, nochel and manchil? It means he gets the inheritance, enough so that he then passed it on to his. Now, assuming he's one of a bunch of brothers, so what's the nafkamina? That's if he's nochel and manchil, so no matter what, the property's going to be divided up by his brothers. So it's a bit of a strange halacha, because there's no relevance, there's no nafkamina to the fact that he was nochel and manchil, because he obviously doesn't have children to pass it on to, so it's going to go to his brothers. So if that's the case, right, he doesn't have a father for it to go to, so it goes to his brothers. What's the relevance? So we're going to see in a minute that because of that, Rav Sheshet, in a different, not relating to this halacha, Rav Sheshet said somewhere else where this comes up, it's actually a, I think it's a Mishnah in Nida. So Rav Sheshet says, on that Mishnah, he says, it's not talking about a case of the father dying and giving the nechassim to the son, okay, because otherwise there's no relevance, basically, because it's obvious that it's just going to go to his brothers anyway. There's no, doesn't mean anything. So they say, so what we have here is, before we move on to the explanation of it, it seems like the basic explanation is, he's nochel machil, but an ubar would not be able to, and this proves that ubar lo kana, which goes against Rav Sheshet. So now they say, oh, don't infer from that that this is a classic case of Yerusha, in which case the Ubar can't be Koneh, only the Ben Yom Echad can be Koneh, and that rejects Rosh Hashanah. No. This Mishnah doesn't teach us anything about that at all, because the Mishnah is talking about something else. Okay, what's it talking about? And here, Rav Sheshet already, like I said, in Nida, when he went to explain this Mishnah, because it didn't make so much sense to him, again, not relating to the Ubar Koneh or not, but it sounds like it didn't even make sense to him for other reasons. Ha, Amar Rav Sheshet, Nochel b'nechse ha'em l'hankhil l'achav min ha'av. B'davka ben yom achad aval ubar lo. What's the case? It's a case where the mother died. Okay, this, right, you can imagine the mother dies in childbirth. Okay, the son, so the baby survives for a day. So what happens? He's alive enough to be nochel her possessions, because remember, the banim, right, get her possessions. And then, right, nochel b'nechse ha'em, in order to be mankhil to his brothers through his father, right? So he could take her money and give it to people that are unrelated to her, because they're related to him through the father, because nachala works through the father. So his brothers from his father will get the nachala of this woman. Okay? That's what it means. And that will only work if it's a ben yom achad aval ubar lo. But that has nothing to do with the ubar kone, right, in utero in a regular case. This is just unique about the nechse ha'en. Okay, but that wouldn't work if it was an ubar. It wouldn't go to his brothers. My taima. What's the assumption here? Why wouldn't it work if it's an ubar? Meaning, what if she dies in childbirth and so does the child? So, dehu mayit bereisha. Ve'en haben yoreshet imo bekever lahanchir la'achav min ha'av. What does this mean? There's an assumption that if the child died in childbirth and the mother died, that the child must have died first. Which means if the child dies first, he can't, right? He doesn't inherit, because you don't inherit if the, right? We saw this before, that if the father dies before you're born, you will inherit, but you won't inherit the mother's property in order to pass it on to your brothers from the father. That doesn't work if Anna ben Yoresh Timo Bekever, if he's dead. Right? Remember, we learned that if the Yerusha is supposed to go to that person and that person's dead, what happens? It goes to their inheritors, right? But not when it's talking about the nechassim of the mother. Okay, so therefore, the assumption is that the child died first. So now they say, Lamemra, who might Beresha? You're trying to say that in all cases of this, the baby dies first. Now, I'm not sure why they didn't answer a better answer, which is the brothers who are trying to get the money, the brothers from the father, just have no proof, right? If they want to say, we want that mother's inheritance, even though she's not our mother, right, but it should have gone to there, they just have no way to prove who died first. But the Gemara's assumption, and this is maybe based on their, I would say, quote-unquote scientific knowledge, that their assumption is the baby always dies before the mother. In a case where the children die in childbirth, I don't know the actual scientifics of this. I assume it's not necessarily true. And then the Gemara brings their attempt at disproving it. V'ha havda uvda upirkis tlata perkuse. There was a case where the baby moved, what's the word? Perkus, like a convulsion. Right, convulsion. That's what I was saying. A convulsion. Okay. Had three convulsions. So there you see the baby survived after the mother's death. So here's the interesting answer. Amar bar of Ashi, midi dehave azanav halita asha befrakeset. Okay, if you ever kill a lizard, right, or a salmon, yeah, one of those, the tail will still...
Basic reflexes.
What's it called? Yeah, just reflexes. Okay, so the reflexes basically show that, right, the baby's not, just like the lita'ah wasn't really alive, also the baby wasn't really alive. Okay, that doesn't disprove our theory. Okay, so that was one way of understanding this Mishnah in Nida about the Tinok ben Yom Echad, Nochel Lemochil, that it had nothing to do with Izanu bar Kone or Izanu bar not Kone. It had to do with this unique halacha about the nechasim of the mother that go through the child only if the child survives her, and not if the child predeceases her, and the basic assumption that the child must always predecease the mother in a case of a stillborn and a death from childbirth. Amar Mar Bar of Ashi. I'm sorry, next line. Mar Barei de Rav Yosef, Mishmei de Rav Amar. He has a different explanation entirely of this Mishnah. What does he say? Lomar Shemimait Bechelek Bechora. V'dafka ben yom achad, aval ubar lo. What does it mean? It means that when this ubar dies, okay, I'm sorry, this ben yom achad dies, going back to the nechasim of the father, okay, again we're going to say it teaches us a different halacha, right? It's not the basic halacha, but we don't have to go so far as to say it's talking about nechse ha'em. It's actually talking about nechse ha'av. But what's the issue? Assume there were two children, okay? We have the bechor, and we have the regil, you know, the regular. We call it the pashut, right? We have the bechor, we have a pashut, and then we have a ben yom echad. Okay? So now when we go to divide the portions, we know they don't get equal portions because the bechor gets pishnayim. Now, in this case, what do we say? If the baby was alive and we count him, how do we view this? There's three sons, so we say there's four portions, right? So each one's going to get... Right, let's assume, okay, I'll take the example in the Shans and they give a good example of the number 12 because it's divisible by 4 and divisible by 3. Okay, so let's say the father has 12 portions. So what's going to happen? The Bechor is going to get Pishnayim. He's going to get 6. The Pashut is going to get 3. And the Ben Yom Echad is going to get 3. And then what will happen? Well, the Ben Yom Echad doesn't make it. So his portion gets divided between the brothers, which means that the 3 disappears, right? So we add 1.5 to each side. So we're going to end up with 7.5 and 4.5, you see? So the sons are going to divide up the property. The Pashut will get 4.5, the Bechor will get 7.5. If we don't count the Ben Yom Echad, we're going to have 2 sons. We divide it into 3. The Bechor gets 8 portions and the Pashut gets 4 portions. So that's going to be the relevant halacha. So we say it like this. According to the first reading of Mar Barei de Rav Yosef in the name of Rava, we say Lomar Shemimait Bechelek Bechora. In other words, he weakens the chelek of the Bechora, meaning they count him in when they figure out how many portions the Bechor gets. V'davka ben yom echad, aval ubar lo. But if it was an ubar that died, the ubar would not decrease the portion of the Bechor, and he'd get the full 8 portions. My taima, what's the reason? Because what does it say in Parshat Bechor? V'yaldu lo, right? And she gave birth to, right? V'yaldu lo, sorry, right? And to the man was born, meaning only children who are born are counted in for the Bechora. Amar Rahman, okay, the pasuk says V'yaldulo. De Amar Mar Barei de Rav Yosef Mishmei de Rava Ben Shenolad, and here he says it explicitly, Ben Shenolad Lachar Mitat Aviv Eino Mema'et Bechelek Bechora. So he says a ben that's born after the death of his father, this is different. This is if he's born after the father died. Here, it's like I said before, he would have to have died. First the father died, then the son, right? First, you would have to have it. He was born, the father died, right? And then he dies. So, a ben shenolad lachar mitat aviv, likewise, he says that if the son is born after the father already died, he's also eino mema'et bechelek bechora. My taima v'yaldulo. Okay? So here it has 2 ramifications, this halacha, right? One is our halacha that he is going to be mema'et if he's born, even if he dies immediately after. And if he was born later, after the father's death, then also he wouldn't, then he dafka wouldn't be mema'et. Okay? He would have to have been born when he was there. V'yaldulo amar rachmana. V'haleika. And here he wasn't yet born. So now the Gemara says like this, Besura Manuhachi. That's the way they learned this Ma'amar, okay, Rav Yosef, Mishmei de Rava, is basically learning from V'yaldulo that, number one, even a Ben Yom Echad is B'ma'et Bechora, and if he was born after the father's death, then he's not B'ma'et V'chelek Bechora, from the words V'yaldulo. But Pumbedita Ma'nuhachi, in Pumbedita, they taught this statement of Rav Yosef in the name of Rava as something different, having to do with Bechor, but not the same halacha. What did they say? Which then would not have to do with our case. Amar Mar Barei de Rav Yosef, Mishmei de Rava. Bechor shenolad lachar mitat aviv, eino notel pishnayim. A bechor that's born after the father dies doesn't get pishnaim. Why is that? My taima yakir amarachmana v'haleta de yakir. Okay, in other words, you need, remember it says the father is yakir late lo pishnaim, and the father never knew him, so he doesn't get pishnaim. Obviously, what's the relevance? If he's the bechor, he gets everything. If the bechor was born after the father died, there's, right? You would assume there's no other children, but it's not true, because number one, it could be there's twins, twin boy, right? And then if there's twin boys, then who's the bechor? There's actually no bechor if the mother gives birth to twins after his death. Number two, you could have a case where he has two wives and both are pregnant when he dies. So it actually could be relevant, this halacha. Okay, in any case, before we move on for a minute, I just want to go back to what was the point of all this. The point of all this was that the Mishnah, the Rav Sheshet, we tried to use to reject Rav Sheshet and say, Tinok ben Yomachad nochel manchil, which is just ben Yomachad, but Ubar lo, because Ubar is lo kane, doesn't have to do with regular Yerusha. It was talking about, is it Mema'et Achelek HaBechorah? And there we learned that only the ben Yomachad is Mema'et Achelek HaBechorah, not the Ubar. So what do we have from here? This doesn't reject Rosh Hashanah's opinion that in a classic case, a new bar could be kones still. Okay? Because this has nothing to do with it. Okay, now the Gemara is going to tell us, by the way, since we already just discussed these, now we're getting off on a tangent, because we had this statement of Margarita of Yosef Mishmei de Rava, and then we went on to say, oh no, well someone else has a different version of him. So interestingly enough, the Gemara says, V'hilchata kekol hane lishnei. To Amar Marbar of Yosef, Mishmei de Rava. Okay, we paskin like both those. Okay, we paskin, right, there were two versions, one they said in Surah and one they said in Pumbedita, about what the son of Rav Yosef said in the name of Rava, and we say we paskin like both of them. Okay, that the Ben Yom Achad is Mema'et the Bechora, and if he's born after Mitat Aviv, he won't, and also a Bechor born after Mitat Aviv doesn't get the Pishnaim. Okay, now we're going back to our case about a mezakeh l'ubar. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. We're going to see Piskei Halacha about this issue. Hamezakeh l'ubar lo kana. Okay, he says if you're mezakeh l'ubar, it actually doesn't work. Ve'im tomar mishnatenu. But what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says if it's zachar, he can get mana, and if it's nikeva, which sounds like he is mezakeh l'ubar. So what are you going to say? Ho'ir v'da'ato shel adam krova etzel b'no. Again, we talk about how much gemirut da'at he had, right? How much did he really intend to give this? So when we're talking about a random ubar, right, or anyone not his son or daughter, we're going to say he really didn't mean it because it was an ubar and it's a davar shelo ba'al olam and it's up in the air and he didn't even really know whether it was going to happen or not. So therefore, it wasn't a real kinyan. But if it's his own child and he wants to give a gift to the fetus, when it's born, he's allowed to do that. Okay, that would work. That's our mission. Our mission is an exception to the rule. Okay, that's what you'd have to say. So in general, mezakeh l'ubar lo kane, but our mission is an exception to the rule. That's a different answer than Rav Huna, who just said, I don't know who read our Mishnah, right? And it's interesting that the Gemara didn't give that as the answer before. That's what we're saying now. Amar le Shmuel le Rav Chana Bagdata. Okay, Shmuel said to Rav Chana from Baghdad, Puk aiti li be'asara. Go and bring me in front of 10 people. This is when you want to make something public, do it in front of 10 people. The emralach, right, sometimes you could do it in front of 3, but there's certain things we do in front of 10 to make it even more public. The emralach ba'apayu, and I want to say in front of them, ha-mizakeh l'ubar kana. Okay, he wants to say you actually can be mizakeh l'ubar. So you see that the machloket that went on, right, continues on, and people are very strong-minded about it. B'hilchatan, the Gemara tells us, though, the halacha is ha-mizakeh l'ubar lo kana. Okay, we actually don't paskin like him, like Rav Shmuel, but we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, okay, who says basically it doesn't work except for our case in the Mishnah, which is an exception. Ha'uda amar lehu l'debitu. Now there's a case where a guy said to his wife, Nichasai lebanai dehavu leminach. I want to give all my possessions to the children I have from you, and who are not in existence yet. Okay, according to the Mefarshim, she's not even pregnant. Okay? So he says, I want to give all my inheritance, right? Let's say he has another wife and he wants to write them out of his will. So I want to give all my possessions to you. But they don't even exist. She's not even pregnant. Ata Bere Kashisha, his oldest son from a different marriage, comes to him. Amar Lei, Hahu Gavra, my Tehavele. He talks about himself in the third person. He says, that guy that you wrote out of your will, what's going to be with him? Right? He's going to get nothing. He comes and complains to his father and says, what did you do? You just wrote me out of the will. So Amar Le, he says this very unclear statement. Zil kane kechad mibra. Go and acquire a portion just like one of my other sons that I gave all my possessions to. Okay? Which could sound like, right? Could sound like two things. Could sound like when I eventually have other sons and comes the day that I die, so everything will be divided equally. You'll get a portion along with them. Okay? He's writing it back into the will, basically. Another option could be that he's saying, go acquire like they did, and they acquired nothing because they're not even, right? They're not even in Ubar. Forget about if Ubar is Kona. This is really Devar Shelo Ba'al Olam. It's not even, it's just a potential. Maybe she'll have babies. And therefore, he says, go acquire like one of them. He's basically saying, I'm giving you nothing. Okay? So let's see what happens here. Hanach Vadai Lo Kanu, Da'akati Litnihu. Okay, so they for sure, according to this, they for sure have no kinyan from this statement of his because they're not even in existence yet. So, hi, eat chulik l'talya b'mkom banya. Does he get a chelik? Talya is a lamb. This lamb, they're calling this child a lamb. Does this lamb get a chelik b'mkom banya with the other sons? Oh, leitle chulik l'talya b'mkom banya. Or does he not get a chelik? So, in other words, how do we view it? The way I said or the two options that I said? So now we're going to have a machloka between three rabbis and three rabbis. Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Maisha, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Da'amrei id chulik letalia bimkom baneya. He gets a chelik with the sons. Rabbi Avav, Rabbi Chanina bar Papi, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, Da'amrei leit chulik letalia bimkom baneya. Okay, so Rabbi Avav, Rabbi Chanina bar Papi, and Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha say he doesn't get a portion. So Amar le Rabbi Avahu le Rabbi Yirmiyah. So Rabbi Avahu now from the second group says to Rabbi Yirmiyah from the first group, Halacha kavatan or halacha kevataychu. Is the halacha like us or is the halacha like you? Right, it's three against three. So Amar le Rabbi Yirmiyah says, Pshita dehilchata kavatan. Clearly the halacha is like us. Tikashisha minaychu, because we're older than you. Okay, we know more. V'lav hilchata kavataychu tidar dekeatu, and your children. Okay, we don't hold like you. Obviously, they weren't children, but you're saying you're young ones. Amar le, so Rabbi Avahu didn't like this answer, obviously, and he said, midi b'kashishuta talia milta? Now, he did go to him to ask what's the halacha, so he respected him. But he didn't like the way he paskened his methodology. He said, do we pasken halacha based on age? B'tama talia milta, right? We basically decide based on who has a better answer. This is a good question, right? Whether you go by age because, you know, older people do have a little, you know, more perspective on life and they're generally considered wiser. And here we're not talking about non-Talmidei Chachamim versus Talmidei Chachamim, right? Non-Talmidei Chachamim, we're older, maybe you could say no. But here, you have a group of Talmidei Chachamim, we're more seasoned. Maybe we really should, but he says no. Shouldn't it be Batama? Which, by the way, you know, someone more youthful would obviously say, "Oh well, we know better." You know, Batama mai zil gabed. And now he says to him like this: it's not just Batama talia milta, but he says Batama mai. And why do I think that we have a better reason? Zil gabed to Rabbi Avin. Go to Rabbi Avin and ask him, because Rabbi Avin, if you notice, you have to go back now. I don't know if you remember, he was in the first group with Rabbi Yirmiyah. And he says, De azbarte niele, I went before Rabbi Avin and I explained to him my logic. Bikarkish be reshe be midrasha. And he nodded his head at me in the Beit Midrash, which sounds like he's saying, right, that he agreed with him. Azil ligabe, so Rabbi Yirmiyah goes to him. In other words, what he's basically saying is, one guy on your side, when he heard my logic, he agreed with me. He switched to my side. So that should show that our reason is stronger than yours, and therefore you should paskin like us. And what was his reason? Azal gabe amarle, ilu amarle kne kechamor mikane. Okay, if someone said, go acquire like a donkey would acquire, would you get a portion? Okay, and that's why they held that when he said, right, it's like we, you know, you get a portion just like your brothers did, but everyone agreed that the brothers didn't get a portion. So you're saying if you got like your brothers, you got Ephes, right? You got nothing. So therefore, and we're going to get tomorrow into this, what this Kenei Kechamor case is. Okay, we'll see. Not everyone necessarily agrees that Kenei Kechamor isn't Kona. We'll see what the different opinions are about it tomorrow. It's actually going to start the same way as this page started, which is there's going to be a three-way machloket, and then Rav Sheshet's going to say, where do I get my opinion from? So it's going to be the same type of thing as today, where we ended the sugya with, and this breaks into a three of a machloket, and Rav Sheshet then brought the opinion. Where do I get my opinion from? So it's going to, tomorrow's stuff is going to start the same way as today.